The hour 10:15 have arrived. We'll call the House Tax Committee to order. We do not have a quorum at this point, but we will start with Sarah Anderson, or excuse me, Representative Sarah Anderson Day at the Capitol. That's what we call it. So we have three bills. The first bill, House File 254, is for informational only. So we'll move it so it's before us, but then we'll just leave it at that if that's okay, Chair Anderson. Okay. When we have a quorum, we will break in and get the minutes. Only Representative Schultz is here. Okay, so Chair Anderson will move House File 254. Chair Anderson, welcome to Tax Committee.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. For the members that have served on this committee before, they've heard this piece of legislation. The R&D tax credit, Minnesota, by the way, was the first state to institute the R&D tax credit in 1982. The feds put it in place in 1981, and we followed suit a year later to put R&D as a tax credit for innovation here in the state of Minnesota. And when this was put first in place, didn't apply, I don't think it was until 1987, or Mr. Michael could probably correct me on the year of when it was applied to the sole proprietors, and then that was later removed, if I remember correctly.
Okay, we'll go to Mr. Michael. First of all, we do have a quorum. We'll officially call the meeting of the House Tax Committee to order. We will have to postpone minutes for several days as Representative Schultz, I think, comes back Thursday. So we wouldn't be able to do that at this point. So, Mr. Mike, okay, so the meeting is called to order. Chair Anderson moves House File 254 to have a fourth. You just won't move it to pass conclusion. Oh, we're not moving anything because we don't have possession of it. So I thought the tax committee can do whatever we wanted. Okay. No, we don't have before. It's information only. We don't officially have before. So I apologize for that. Mr. Michael, to the Anderson question.
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, when the research tax credit was initially enacted, it applied to the same set of taxpayers as the federal credit applied to. So it actually applied to both individuals, including sole proprietors and C corporations. What happened was when the state did its tax reform in 1987, it repealed the availability of the individual of the credit to individuals and limited to C corporations. So for that period from 82, I think tax year 82 through tax year 86, it applied to individuals, including sole proprietors. Then it was re-extended to individuals, but only passed through entities in, I believe, in 2010. Maybe Representative Anderson knows. But it was not allowed to sole proprietors. So what Representative Anderson's bill would do would take us back to the 80s and reallow it for sole proprietors the way it was originally.
I should have done my hair appropriate for the 80s, but I'll spare you that. Sure.
I actually had hair in the 80s. With that being said, you too. I wasn't going to go there. The front table. Yeah. All of us did at that point. So, Mr. Michael, to this point on this bill, okay, so now it's not sole proprietors, but, and you said C Corps. What about sub S's? What about LLCs, LLPs?
Mr. Michael? Mr. Chairman, the credit is currently available to pass-through entities, so S corporations, partnerships, and LLCs, taxes partnerships. It's just not allowed to sole proprietors.
Okay, Chair Anderson.
And that's it in a nutshell, Mr. Chair. It just brings it back to the way that it was originally. It's very small in the number of people that it does impact, but it does make a difference to those that would be able to access this.
Okay. Was there anyone, this is informational person only, anyone from the public like to make comments on this or the department? Okay, then I think we'll go to Chair Anderson moves House File 90. Are there any amendments to House File 90? To get the bill in the shape the author would like. Chair Anderson moves House File 90. Chair Anderson, is the A1 amendment yours?
Yes, it is.
Chair Anderson moves the H0090A1 amendment. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion prevails. Thank you, Chair Anderson, to your bill as amended.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Oh, so this is dealing with an issue that was brought forth by IBM, actually. And under current law, on the federal level, they allow for this alternative simplified credit. And what we would do is we would mimic what they do on the federal level, and it would allow entities like IBM to access this. And what it does is it allows them to have a three-year period that they're looking at rather than going back to their base year, which can sometimes be very complicated. I think it's like a 10-step process that they have to go through in the traditional R&D version, which can be overly cumbersome and doesn't account for fluctuations in the economy and so forth. So what this does is it simplifies it, gives some of these corporations here in Minnesota a different way of calculating it, and hope that you would support the bill, Mr. Chair.
Okay, thank you very much. If Ms. Templin could come forward, we have members, just so you know, we're using numbers from the 2015-16 estimate here. We weren't able to quite get from the Department of Revenue current numbers. Maybe Ms. Templin could explain what's going on here, and please state your name and who represents for the record, please.
Mr. Chair, Cynthia Templin, House Fiscal Staff. Typically, when bills are heard in the House, in the full committee, the committee does have current revenue estimates completed by the Department of Revenue. But for these three bills today, the department was not able to complete the revenue estimates in time for the hearing. So for each bill today, you have estimates in front of you, but they're from previous years. They're the most current estimates that we have from previous years. And in some instances, they are not completely identical to the bills being proposed today, but they are very similar and should show the magnitude of the scope of the proposal in terms of general fund revenue impact.
Okay, so I'll give us some idea, but maybe not as accurate as the actual estimates.
That's correct. And, Mr. Chair, the department did say that they would complete the revenue estimates for the bills being heard or committee today, but they were having some database issues related to the R&D tax credit.
Oh, okay. And that's fine. We'll work with that. Okay. So are there folks that like to test? Well, I don't have anybody listed for testimony in this bill. Should we go to the next bill? Okay, so Chair Anderson removes her motion that House File 9 to be laid over for possible inclusion as amended in the omnibus tax bill. Item next, Chair Anderson moves House File 253. So we have that before us, members. Let's see here. Chair Anderson, is the A2 amendment your amendment?
It is, Mr. Chair.
Okay, Chair Anderson moves the H025382 amendment. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Thank you, Representative Erickson. we now, you're needed. That was very helpful. Okay, so with that being said, we have House File 253 as amended by Representative Erickson. And so, and members, the same thing here. Notice from the Minnesota Department of Revenue, March 25th, 2015 date, so we will work with the department to get more accurate numbers, but this kind of gives us an idea. So to your bill, and first of all, I have, we'll go to a description of the bill by the author, and then I have testified to Shane Mandel, Lonnie Stormo, John Dukic, Beth Cadoon. Anyone else for the bill or with concerns thereof? And of course, the department will give us the wrap up. With that. So, to your bill as amended, Chair Anderson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. So, as I mentioned earlier, Minnesota was the first state to have a R&D tax credit on the state level. In 2010, the R&D was made refundable. Again, we were the first state to make this tax credit refundable. That was carried by Chair Lincheski at the time in the jobs bill. And then in 2013, the refundability was removed, which was really unfortunate because it was a huge win for the state of Minnesota when we put it in place in 2010. We were lauded across the nation as a state to go to for innovation and having startup companies here in the state. The R&D tax credit, I just want to talk about just what kind of people that we are able to employ
through innovation and companies that access this tax credit. It has been a huge boon for the state. It's the reason that Minnesota is considered the medical alley of the nation. We have currently over 222,000 people that are employed in high tech, and another 151,000 that are employed in tech occupations. So this is a significant number of Minnesotans that are benefiting from Minnesota being the medical alley. It's about $13.3 billion in payroll that we are generating here in the state because of this. And it also has ties to the University of Minnesota. As you know, it's a research university, and the university has been able to spin off a lot of good companies here in the state of Minnesota. And this is just an effort to try and keep these businesses here in the state and the innovation to keep growing. And I think all of us can point to individuals that have benefited from the technologies that have been invented here in the state through health and other means. And we certainly want to keep that going here in the state. And with that, Mr. Chair, I have a host of individuals that would like to testify and offer their expertise on it as well.
Could you please state your name and who you represent for the record, please, sir?
Shea Mandel, President and CEO of the Medical Alley Association.
Welcome to the Tax Committee, sir.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. I want to thank Representative Anderson for continuing to be a leader on behalf of health technology companies. And while not germane, I'll just say, you know, as we talked about the 80s early, the 80s did have some things that were really good for Minnesota. I point to Purple Rain, for example, as one of the real strengths of the 80s for us. But we're here today to talk about the R&D tax credit and really Minnesota's future. As you all know, the landscape is incredibly competitive for R&D jobs. The health technology companies in Minnesota that employ the getting close to 200,000 people have a six-figure average salary. These are the jobs we want. This is the magnet that attracts talent and investment and will continue to move our state forward. There are two pieces to this proposal. The first is going back to refundability in the first tier. This is critical to get companies started here. We see other states like Arizona putting a 24% credit to attract early stage companies. So at the early stage, we are competing with both traditional peer powers like California and Massachusetts, but also upstart states that are really looking to start companies, the Ohios, Texas, Arizonas of the world. Refundability was a distinguishing characteristic of Minnesota's credit for a long time. Other states have attempted to follow suit, and there are now several states that have refundability. So we've gone from being ultra-competitive to now starting to lose ground. And so, you know, we would really stress on the committee how important refundability is for those early-stage companies. The second component includes shifting our second tier. And the second tier is critical to keep jobs growing in companies that do a significant amount of R&D, larger companies. Compared to other states, California, Massachusetts, our 2.5% compared to their 15% is, again, a big threat to us being able to grow jobs. And, again, I continue to reiterate that we want spinoffs from Mayo, from the University of Minnesota. We want that early stage refundability. But what we also want is Medtronic and Boston Scientific and Abbott St. Jude, when they're adding, you know, 25, 50, 100 jobs, that they're doing it here, not at their facilities in California or Massachusetts. And ultimately, you can't separate these two. It really is about the ecosystem. So one of the reasons we have great early stage companies is because large companies spin out executives who start companies, and you'll hear from one a little bit later. It's because they work with the university in Mayo, and that ecosystem draws investors from big companies. They start companies, and the cycle continues. And so what we're advocating for is Minnesota being holistically competitive in this space. And then quickly, I'd like to show you actually what happens within our companies that engage in R&D. So first, and I'll pass this around, you can hardly see it, from this is the Watchman, a Boston Scientific product. This reduces the risk of stroke in non-valvular atrial fibrillation patients. And perhaps more importantly, you know, as warfarin has become, you know, a heavily consumed drug in this country, this helps to stop bleeding associated with warfarin. And I'll go ahead and just pass the Watchman around, a Boston Scientific product. And then I have one other toy for everyone today. This is the Micra Transcatheter Pacemaker, Medtronic's newest product. This is the world's smallest pacemaker. This is the world's only leadless pacemaker. And more than 600,000 people get pacemakers every year. So you've probably all seen this in the news. We'll pass it around. The most important thing is that both of these products were almost entirely developed here in Minnesota at Medtronic and Boston Scientific. The R&D tax credit is directly related to supporting the activity that produces these life-saving therapies. So with that, Mr. Chair, members of the committee, I thank you for your time and attention and appreciate the opportunity to speak to you today.
Questions for the witness? Okay, thank you very much, sir. Lonnie Stormo, CEO, POPS Diabetes Care.
Do you have any of those ones? Any of these gadgets in you? You have some type surgery, didn't you?
Yeah. Please state your name if you represent for the record, please, sir.
Lonnie Stormo, CEO of POPS Diabetes Care.
Welcome, committee.
Thank you. Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, I have a unique perspective. I spent 30 years at Medtronic, working at arguably the largest medical device company in the world. Even had a hand in that micro pacemaker that's getting handed around as I worked on cardiovascular products and development for many, many years. I also have diabetes. And people with diabetes are not doing great today. In fact, 75% of our healthcare costs in diabetes are because of the complications of diabetes. So I left Medtronic a year and a half ago to begin a startup here in Minnesota called POPS Diabetes Care. We're a digital healthcare company focused on helping people get better results in managing their diabetes at home and eliminating unnecessary clinic visits. I'm handing around a sample in terms of what we're doing, but essentially we have the most portable, simplest, least painful way to measure your glucose paired with your phone, which engages you in helping you manage your diabetes and reaching your goals. So now I can completely manage my diabetes in the palm of my hand. We've had some nice success in terms of winning things like the American Diabetes Association Venture to Stop Diabetes last year, multiple patents issued, multiple patents filed around the world, national publications. We've raised $2 million, and we're on our way to FDA approval. And we're arguably the smallest device company in the world now. We have two full-time employees, but we have a big impact on Minnesota, and that's what I want to share with you today. So as a startup, we take advantage of many of the things that you all talk about, the angel tax credit, the R&D tax credit, the angel loan fund, the SciTech experience. All of these are ways that we've been able to extend ourselves and do more. Just as an example, imagine the ecosystem that Shay just talked about, the innovation ecosystem in Minnesota as a bike wheel. And we're POPS Diabetes at the hub of that bike wheel and the spokes and the effect we have on the ecosystem. So as an example, we hire a local company, iTech Medical, to do development for us, which creates jobs, and they're going to be manufacturing for us for years to come. We work with another company, MentorMate, who's doing our software development here in Minnesota. We work with more established organizations like Fredrickson and Byron Law Firm, Morris Code Marketing Agency, and even Children's Hospital in Minnesota, who's doing research for us and then publishing and getting that innovation reputation coming out of Minnesota. Many individual consultants, many investors are involved with us. And we work with the University of Minnesota. We have two interns that have come out of the University of Minnesota that are getting experience working in a company like ours, hiring professors at Minnesota who are doing publications and presentations for us based on our research, and sponsoring the Elite Eight marketing competition last year where competitors from all around the nation came in and talked about digital health happening in Minnesota. So when we get national publications presented on us, that's good for Minnesota's reputation. When we started this company, I had an investor that told me, if you're going to do digital health, you need to go to California. That's where the ecosystem is. That's where the talent is. That's where the investors are. Well, we didn't want to go to Minnesota. Or, I'm sorry, California. We wanted to stay in Minnesota. And I think when an investor called me last week because of one of the publications we had out come out a couple weeks ago, and they called from California and wanted to talk about digital health investment here in Minnesota, and they said, so you're in Minneapolis. I mean, that's a good thing for us all. So I don't wake up every day thinking about how Popstate Unity Care is going to affect Minnesota. I got many more close milestones to worry about than that. But you all do wake up talking about how you're going to impact Minnesota, and thank you for that. I appreciate that. And I would just ask you to remember this bike wheel when you're having debates about things like this and how they might impact a startup happening in Minnesota and how it's so much bigger than just us, the smallest device company in the world. Thank you.
Okay, questions for Mr. Stormall? I've got a question. You said that you worked on that little pacemaker thing.
I did.
What's that retail for?
That's out of my... So I do not know the answer to that question. Oh. I honestly don't.
Do you know? Mr. Mandel?
I don't actually have an answer. And obviously there's a range based on insurance coverage.
This one is a multiple pacemaker discount or something. Okay, so with that, questions? Chair Carlson, and then Lesch.
Mr. Chairman, this is part of curiosity, but in reference, Mr. Stormall, you referenced that you're the smallest startup in the world or country or whatever, and then you referenced Medtronic, and I'm just kind of curious how these credits work if you were to step back one. And when you mentioned Medtronic, you know, there's the stories about how they started in a garage in North Minneapolis. I'm assuming that, another one was one of our computer companies started in a garage in California. But those folks were making investments at the time before they really probably had a viable business model. So how do these credits work with somebody that's even a little bit earlier in the game than you are now?
Mr. Stormall?
Or maybe somebody else would know the answer to that. You know, the guy in the garage or the woman that's come up with an idea. Remember, we talked about mops in here one day, and I've got two relatives that invented things, but not of the medical type. I shared that with you one time, the mechanical mop that my grandfather invented. But at any rate... all of those things kind of start in a very small, almost sometimes home environment when we reference garages and probably basements and that kind of thing. But they're investing in equipment and so on to develop their product.
So is the question then, at what time does this credit kick in? Or where
that's
do we
what, yeah, how does it work for that very early, I call them inventors or researchers or whatever, that would come about prior to developing the smallest company in the world?
Or maybe Chair Anderson?
Well, that's the whole reason why we need to have this piece of legislation in particular, because it brings back the refundability. So if you're a small startup company and you're not making profit yet, you still are able to access this credit, even if you have zero tax liability. That's the important part of this. And for a lot of those startup companies, they're not going to see a profit until they're able to get their item on the market. And so this is really helping those small innovators get the capital that they need to keep investing in their product that they need to get to market, and help them through that long, arduous process to get approval for this. So this is a key provision. And in Minnesota, this is what makes it attractive for these businesses to be here in this state. And they could be the next Medtronic, or what you have here with POPS. And they are developing medical devices that Minnesotans get to see first. And I know that we had legislation in the past on the right to try on medical items. And this is just an example of, if we keep that here in Minnesota, it's Minnesotans that are going to benefit from it first and foremost.
And also, I think it relates to House File 254, going to sole proprietors also would be beneficial for the folks just starting off. Chair Carlson.
Mr. Chairman, my question was for even earlier, before you have the startup company, the person that has an idea and begins to work on it, like we were referencing Medtronic. There was a university tie, I think, there. He was a professor at the U or something. But But anyway, the person that starts in their basement garage got an idea, a concept, before they even start a company. You know, they are investing in supplies and equipment and so on. And then once they have a viable product, they may start the company or sell their idea to somebody else. But maybe I'm asking a question that nobody really knows the answer to, other than in the very earliest of stages how the credit would work. If I had an idea and went home tonight and worked on it and decided I had to buy some supplies or equipment to develop my idea, would I qualify for the tax credit if I haven't actually started a company yet, is what I'm asking. I understand Representative Anderson's answer for startup companies, but I'm going a step earlier, but I won't belabor it if nobody
knows
the answer.
Mr. Michael.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Anderson, essentially the way you described it, you would be a sole proprietor because you haven't formed an entity to be a business. And so under Representative Anderson's previous bill, you could that would enable you as a sole proprietor to qualify for this. Then the refundability under her next bill would allow you to get a refund for the amount of credit that you would qualify for. And the federal tax code has special provisions that relate to how you calculate the credit for startup businesses. I mean, normally the way that the credit's an incremental credit, so it's, as Representative Anderson was describing before with the simplified alternative, normally what a company does is you look back to this period of what your research expenditures were in the 1980s, back when the credit was developed originally. Startup companies have special rules where they're deemed to spend that have their hurdle amount, the threshold they don't qualify for the credit is 3% for the first 5 years of what they spent on research. So the credit would, in the case you indicated, if you were a sole proprietor, you filed a tax return, you wouldn't get a federal credit because you don't have any income and any federal liability. But if you had a state credit that applied to sole proprietors that was refundable, you would in fact get a credit for the amount over 3% of the qualified research that you spent. Now, if you're just, you got to have employees to actually do this. So the scenario you're describing, you probably don't have employees, so you probably aren't going to get a credit. But if you had employees that you were paying, because that's largely what the credit applies to, is payments that are made to people conducting research, employees, you could get the credit. Or if you went through the trouble to form an entity and, you know, actually had an entity and then had that entity employ you, then you could get the credit too. It's a long answer to the...
Sure, well, that's helpful. But in other words, you have to have an entity before you would qualify, by kind of bottom line.
If sole proprietors qualify for the federal credit, but they have to have employees, you don't get it on self-employment. Okay.
So that's a step beyond, Mr. Chairman, from what I was talking about.
You were way at the beginning.
Well, I, in this committee one time when we were having this kind of discussion, used my grandfather. He had several inventions, but probably because of that movie, The Mop, he invented the mechanical mop. Then he got a patent. Remember, I passed it around showing his name was Oscar Carlson. And then after he got the patent, he started his business, which ultimately ended up being a small factory on Washington Avenue North in Minneapolis. And then the Depression hit, and he sold his patent and what have you. But I was talking about an inventor, somebody with an idea then that would be at that idea of working, at that point of working on the invention, then getting the patent, and then going into business. And you wouldn't have employees probably unless you had somebody working on the invention maybe with you earlier. But at any rate, that was good. Good background. Thank you.
Thank you, Chair Carlson. Chair Lesh.
I'll pass, Mr. Chair.
Representative Grunhagen.
Oh, thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you, Sarah, for bringing these forward. I believe every word you said.
That's Representative Anderson to you.
Who did I say? Sarah? Oh, yeah. Okay, I stand corrected. She sits behind me on the House floor, so I turn around and talk to her once in a while. She Yeah. She corrects me once in a while, so anyway.
Just once in a while, yeah.
But no, my understanding is when Ronald Reagan became president, one of the things he did was provided tax credits and reductions for research and development nationally. And of course, it incentivized tremendous economic prosperity and companies developing, growing forward. But, you know, I had a friend who got a virus. And by the way, is your name Mr. Stormna?
Stormo?
Yes. Stormo. Okay, I got it. I never had phonics. I had vocal language when I was little, so I get a hard time pronouncing names. No. Anyway, I had a friend. He got a virus in his heart that goes around from time to time, and it brought him down to about 20% of his heart working. So he had to get a battery that would shock his heart and then shock it back on again. So one day I was sitting there and I asked him, well, what did that battery cost you? He said $19,999. I said, are you sure you couldn't have gone down to the local gas station and picked it up for $3 or $4? He said, no. But then I also have a close friend who's a medical device engineer. And he complains vociferously about the approval process and tort laws that we have that exponentially drive up the cost of these medical devices unreasonably and delays them in many cases. Is there anything we can do on a state level to address the tort concerns of excessive liability? We all have seen the ads, and people have damage, need to be compensated, but I believe there needs to be a cap on it. And then also, is there anything we can do to influence the approval process at the federal level that drives up the cost of these products exponentially?
Mr. Stormo?
So, Mr. Representative, Mr. Chair, I'm probably not the right expert to really address your question fully. I will tell you that as we look at bringing our diabetes solution to market, the FDA process that we're looking at is a reasonable process. I don't think it's, I don't look at it as it's totally overburdened, and I think we're doing the right thing in terms of, and all medical device innovation has to do the right amount of testing to make sure that things that we bring out are safe, because we want to really meet the needs of, the people that are going to be our customers and our patients in the future. But in terms of talking about tort law or if there's something Minnesota can do about the FDA approval process, I'm really not the expert in that.
President Grunhagen?
Thank you.
Okay. We'll now go to Mr. John Dukic. Thank you, Mr. Stormo. Thank you. And then we will go to the department. Please state your name and who you represent for the record, please, sir.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, John Dukic with the Minnesota High Tech Association.
Welcome to the committee.
We're a trade association that represents more than 300 science and technology companies from across the state of Minnesota, with the goal of helping make Minnesota a top five science and technology state. And we're making progress toward that goal. According to a recent 2016 Milken Institute report, Minnesota's ranked 7th nationally, up from 12th in 2014. Now, we get really high rankings on our workforce in science and technology and STEM fields, but we don't rank so high when it comes to research and development activities. Here, we're ranked 19th. And being a competitive state and enhancing our economic and innovation competitiveness is at the forefront of what we do at the High Tech Association and is important for creating high-wage, high-tech jobs in Minnesota. As Representative Anderson noted, Minnesota's technology industry accounts for $13.3 billion in payroll and employs 142,000 people across the state. We have an average wage of $93,500, which is 78% higher than the average private sector wage. So strengthening Minnesota's R&D credit will help create high-wage, high-tech jobs right here in Minnesota. And that goes to increasing the second tier of the credit, returning refundability to the credit to help incentivize and encourage small startups to grow and develop here in Minnesota and stay in Minnesota when they grow to become the next Medtronic or 3M. But it's also about ensuring that companies here stay here when they grow to be the size mid-tier companies all the way up to Medtronic, and IBM. So creating an ecosystem of tax credits, whether it's refundability, increasing the second tier, or providing an alternative structure in place for companies to take advantage of, will help make Minnesota more competitive, help attract jobs and keep jobs here when those companies grow and develop in the state. We have a statement from IBM that all of you should have that speaks to the alternative credit, but our preference is to see the refundability returned and increase the second tier, and we'd love to see the alternative simplified credit enacted as well. And with that, I'd be happy to answer any questions.
Questions for Mr. Dukic? Okay, if you could. Chair Dabney.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. A question I think actually for the author and then perhaps for Mr. Dukic. When Representative Anderson, when you were describing the bill a few minutes ago, talking about wanting to have this for businesses to develop here and stay here, you sounded an awful lot like what I said when I was working on the Angel Investor Tax Credit 6-7 years ago. I forget how long it's been now. So I guess my question is, what is the relationship between the Angel Investor Tax Credit and the R&D Tax Credit? And are we hitting different points along the process? Are we? How do these two fit together?
Chair Anderson?
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you, Representative Dabney. As you know, I'm the author of the Angel Investor Tax Credit bill as well. And that really helps the small startup companies, those that are looking for that startup capital that they need to develop their idea and make it into something great. And so, as you know, I've carried that legislation last couple of times. I believe that it hopefully will be heard here in the Jobs Committee soon. I think you serve on that committee. Mm-hmm. So interested in your feedback on it, since this is a piece of legislation that you've carried and championed. I think it does. It's a great tool for us as a state in helping those startup companies. Last year when we had this hearing on the Angel Investor Tax Credit, I'll never forget the fellow that we had that came to testify. He was a University of Minnesota student, and he had developed an app that basically was a Groupon, if you will, for college students for eateries and bookstores and any kind of retail around the campus. And it was a huge success. And if it were not for the angel investors investing in his idea as a senior at the University of Minnesota, he probably would be in California. In fact, he was solicited by the state of California to come to their state to do the development of his product there. And so it's because of things that we have here in Minnesota that we've been able to keep some really fantastic inventions here in the state. So, I see this as kind of an overall package of goods, if you will, to make sure that Minnesota remains an innovator and a place that people will come to for these kinds of things. And certainly the numbers show it. We've got a high number of people that are employed in this sector. And as Mr. Stormo illustrated, it's just like a bike wheel where you've got one company is helping to benefit all these other folks and all the people that are employed by them. So, yeah.
Chair Dabney.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And then I guess a question for Mr. Dukic, I hope I said that right. My apologies.
That's right.
This bill does refundability, but also, if I understand it, increases the second tier, if I'm reading the description that I have in front of me correctly, from 2.5% to 4.5%. And I guess, how do we know that that's the right percent? How do we compare to other states? How do we know that that's the right percent, and how do we compare to other states? Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Mr. Dukic.
Mr. Chair, Representative Dabney, thanks to the folks at the Medical Alley Association. There's a handout that you have that compares Minnesota to other states. As you see, Minnesota's 2.5% is quite low compared to states such as Indiana, Ohio, Massachusetts, California, Arizona, Texas, New York, New Jersey. These are all states that we compete with for jobs and businesses to locate and do business in. And so strengthening Minnesota's R&D credit will will help make us more competitive with those states in an effort to help attract and retain businesses and talent here in Minnesota. And so strengthening the credit to 4.5% or higher is going to make us look more competitive when compared to other states.
Chair Dabney.
Thank you, Mr. Dukic. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Any other questions for Mr. Dukic? Okay, we will then thank Mr. Dukic and give your President CEO my very best, if you would.
I will do that.
Thank you. Ms. Cadoon, if you could please join us. Please state your name and who you represent for the record, please.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. My name is Beth Cadoon. I represent the Minnesota Chamber of Commerce. I'm here to thank you for having the hearing on the R&D tax credit bills. We're here in strong support of these bills brought forth by Representative Anderson. I want to just highlight a few things, and hopefully I'm not repeating. I did miss a part of the testimony, so I apologize if I repeat anything you already heard. But one thing we did over this last year is we did a new report called the Business Benchmarks. And we were looking at how Minnesota compared on key economic indicators as well as business climate indicators. And there was really a few main findings that we did find. For a couple of our key strengths, one has been workforce, where we still rank very high compared to other states on workforce and our talent of our workforce. The second issue that really stood out was on innovation. We are ranked really high as compared to other states on innovation. We're fourth highest per capita on the number of patents that are done per year. And this has been one of Minnesota's key strengths over the years, and it is on the innovative side, which really helped grow our economy, made these great, tremendous businesses that we have in the state. And we see this now being critical when we're looking at our future economic success as well, is what can we do as a state to make sure we continue that key innovative state strength that we do have. And what we hear from our companies is that R&D, the tax credit, has been an important component that really has helped foster having these good R&D jobs in the state and really help foster then our innovation. The other thing that we found from talking to our members as well as the broader business community is we do through our Grow Minnesota program, we meet with businesses one-on-one throughout the state, not just chamber members, but businesses all across the state. Usually do about 800 visits a year, and we've been doing this now, I think, for about 10 years. And one thing we do is we ask them questions about kind of how they're doing and get key data points as well. What we found is that, this shouldn't be a surprise, is those companies that innovate outperform those companies that do not. Those companies that provide new products and services have higher sales than those other companies. And so we know from those data points, which just seems to make sense, which is that if you innovate, you're going to be more successful. If we have more successful companies, obviously we have a stronger business climate and better jobs. The other thing I want to just mention is for the bills in front of you is what we hear from our members as well is that, like I said, enhancing the R&D credit to be more competitive with other states will be very helpful. Minnesota was the first state in the nation to enact this. Other states have surpassed us. So if we need to make sure that we're being competitive in this area, we're going to have to enhance that credit. The other thing that we've heard, and this is more from smaller manufacturers, is that it would be a great benefit to make it a simpler calculation. When I toured some of these manufacturers, they're doing R&D, but they've run into obstacles on trying to do the R&D tax credit at the state level. Due to the complications, they get denied things that were allowed at the federal level. So if we can make this a simpler credit, I think you're going to see more smaller manufacturers as well be able to take advantage of this credit as well. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Cadoon. Questions for Ms. Cadoon? Okay, thank you very much. We will now go to the department and ask for their comments. We're going to call this the team from Atwater. Absolutely.
I don't know if you'll like that. He's from Grove City.
Ooh.
Yep.
The team from the Atwater Grove City area.
That's true. Mr. Chair and members, for the record, my name is Paul Cummings, and I'm the Tax Policy Manager at the Minnesota Department of Revenue. Mr. Chair, my last name is Cummings, obviously, and there was a person named Stephanie Cunningham, and she said her locker every year was right next to mine. wonderful singer, wonderful athlete, and she was very smart. She was in all of my classes as well. And she is Representative Anderson's cousin.
She is my niece.
My niece, excuse me. So, we
and she
did.
She was taught by my husband.
That is true.
I may want to talk to her.
That's true. Representative Anderson's husband taught me in high school physics and chemistry and calculus. I don't remember much from calculus, but I
don't even know how to spell it.
Notice Paul didn't go into the science field.
No. Nope.
Mr. Cummings.
As you may know, the legislative auditor is currently completing an audit of the R&D credit. We expect their report to be released soon. As in most of their audits, the legislative auditor has provided an advanced copy of the report to the Department of Revenue. Pursuant to Minnesota statutes, data relating to an audit are not public until the final report of the audit has been released by the legislative auditor. Mr. Chair, in an abundance of caution, and so that we're not violating statute, we request that our testimony related to the research and development credit be provided on another day after the Office of Legislative Auditor's report has been released.
Is this like pleading the fifth or something?
Mr. Chair, we have in the past provided testimony and really detailed testimony related to refundability and sole proprietorship. We would like to do that again, Mr. Chair. We really appreciate the conversation about the research and development credit. And so as these bills move forward, we want to work with you, Mr. Chair.
And Mr. Cummings, the timing here, and I understand the timing's off a little bit on this, so we will honor that request from the department. We don't want to put the department in a odd situation, if you will. So we will hear from you after the report's been released on this issue. Chair Anderson, is that okay with you?
Sure.
There, okay. I guess not a whole lot of questions here because you didn't really say anything, but Representative Petersburg. I mean, you did a very good job of saying nothing. Yes. Representative Petersburg.
Thank you so much, Mr. Chair. And I think Mr. Cummings can answer this question because I think earlier we had a question about the market or the targets, shall we say, between angel investor and R&D. And so I'm going to ask this question in a way in which, help me if I'm correct in this. My understanding is that the angel investor credit was designed for investors who provide capital into companies to expand and grow it, and so that the incentive is actually to the investors, where the R&D is for companies that are already in business or are trying to enhance and develop new strategies, and so they really are two different target markets. Am I correct in that assumption?
Mr. Cummings?
Mr. Chair and members, I think if you were to ask the Department of Employment and Economic Development, they would say that there's, you know, many tools in the toolbox in order to try and reach various types of businesses within our economy. One of the things that, you know, we're trying to do, and I know that others are trying to do, is to try and figure out at what times do they overlap and what times is there not anything to meet various customers. So,
President Petersburg.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I was just curious, because it seems to me that you're talking about investors on one side, which are getting credit, on the other, it's the company itself. And in most cases, there is a fair amount of separation between the two and the operations. And so it seemed to me that was the main difference. But that may be a discussion for another time. Thank you.
And Mr. Cummings, I do appreciate the department's position on this. I was made aware of this, and so we will work with the department on that. Chair Anderson?
Well, just to Representative Petersburg, as we've discussed the angel investor tax credit in the past, too, what we've found is a lot of times people that are close to that individual that is doing it are the ones that are the early investors. And so, you know, they're still not part of that company, so to speak, but certainly they wouldn't probably be investing were it not for that individual doing it. So,
any other questions? Representative Perkoff?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Not really a question as much as a comment. I had the same question you did when you saw that little device going around. I asked the gentleman that. And I just wanted to say that back in 1975, when I was working in the coronary care unit, ICU units, when we installed pacemakers back then, subdurally, they were bigger than a hockey puck. They were pretty big. And it's just amazing what type of microchips and how small things have gotten and the technology and the advances that we've made. Innovation through, you know, people's pursuit in the private sector to make a better mousetrap, if you would.
Can you remind me of that Jason Bourne movie where they put that thing in him? Well, sure. That, remember that one? That's two or three. Okay, any other questions? Would you like to wrap it up, Chair Anderson?
Mr. Chair, I'm looking forward to the legislative auditor's report. Anytime that we can get information on how we can do things better, I think is a good thing. And appreciate your time today and members' time as well. So.
Thank you. Chair Anderson renews her motion that House File 253 has amended later for possible inclusion in the omnibus tax bill. Is there anything else? We will be meeting tomorrow at a department overview. Anything else for the good of the order? With that, I would like to see Mr. Shane Mandel after class here for just a second. Good government all the time. We are adjourned.